This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3479 for Thursday the 2nd of December 2021. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E49, Version Control Systems, and Why Bother, and is part of the series, Linux In-Laws. It is hosted by Monochrome, and is about 57 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Version Control Systems, and Why Bother.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 49. Version Control Systems, and Why Bother?
Miss Martin, how are things tonight?
Yeah, things are dark, but otherwise good.
You could go inside and turn on the lights. That's always an option, Martin.
Oh, that uses energy, doesn't it? Isn't there some conference going on at the moment around usage and global warming?
Exactly, it's in a splinter country called called Scotland, which used to be part of something called the UK, but it's now simply called Special K, as in Kingdom.
Have we finally got rid of the Scots, are we?
And the Welsh, and the Northern Irish, and all the rest of them. So let's see how that sustains the overall K economy long term.
Yeah. Well, I guess it will certainly diminish our beer exports to Scotland. But apart from that,
I thought they did their own stuff. Isn't Brewdogs located in Scotland?
Yeah, but nobody drinks that. So, especially, I do. Not the Scottish area. Anyway, just some London hipsters.
I wouldn't consider myself to be London hipster, but I still drink the stuff anyway.
Yes, but then you drink many strange things. So.
From a lukewarm cat piss lover, that's probably correct. Sorry, perspective. I forgot to squeeze that in.
Indeed. Well done. How are you?
Not too bad. The camera people, by the way, if anybody's listening from camera, you call it relays. Same thing, though. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Things have been pretty busy as of late. Because Greta got in touch about this global warming thing, and hence Glasgow. Yes, we are recording this early November of 2022, I think, or maybe 23. I keep forgetting.
No. It will probably go out in 2022.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
But time travel is not the subject, funny enough, of tonight's episode, but rather, Martin, wait for it, version control systems.
How come this is the subject?
Because many people wrote in and complained about the fact that they couldn't get to sleep. Even after the open source licensing episode. Yes. So Martin came up with the idea of doing a version control system episode.
What a brilliant idea.
To rectify this to the situation, let's put it this way. Claudia, if you're listening, this is not only for you, but also for you.
It's for who? Sorry, Claudia. Yes.
Claudia. So, Martin, what do you know about source code control systems?
Oh, they're kind of handy when people develop software.
Perfect. With that, that concludes the episode.
They've been around for a long time. Put it that way.
Yeah. This is record now. I mean, five minutes into the show. Excellent. We are making progress.
Yeah, it makes a difference, doesn't it?
No, funny enough. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, the first one I probably came across was the old fax file system version control system. But yeah,
fax file version control system.
Well, on fax VMS, it used to keep
fax VMS. Yes.
Yes. Automatically all the files, but it's not quite the same as a source code control system. But yeah.
No. It's just just version files, source code or not.
Mm-hmm. But it was a kind of a start of having multiple versions of the same thing.
I think.
Well, first time that I came across anyway.
Well, I think
these kind of things for paper tape and punch cards.
Exactly. I mean, the first version control systems would be punch cards and paper tapes, yes. Mm. Back in the days.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to branch off.
Yeah, but things have progressed, needless to say. No, I mean, the whole fact goes back to the day, basically, when, you see, there was a time when quite a few people worked on a software project, and this is still continuing today. I mean, the Linux kernel alone has more than 1,000 mainstream contributors, if not completely mistaken, plus some hobbyists also chipping in. So a project of that complexity requires some sort of infrastructure because otherwise it'll all end up in chaos. So the idea behind source code control systems was actually to bring order to the chaos. And these control systems and these version control systems have been around almost as long as software was developed or has been developed rather.
Indeed. Well, obviously they became more prevalent when the development of software was more geographically spread. In individual companies there would have been also source code control systems, but nowadays that's obviously more of a global setup rather than your group of programmers that worked in same building in the same room to work on the same piece of software.
Well, that's exactly the drawback of something called open source, right? So you have all these people who think that they're the next big Linus Torvalds and want to contribute to something. So you have to give them infrastructure in order for letting them doing so. You see, it's and you're absolutely spot on. Software development in the open source world has to be global and scalable, because it's not just a group of five people writing a tiny piece of software, which is then put onto a shelf of a company and then kind of is forgotten about, or something like this. I mean, back in the olden days, you had teams. That was way before children. That was way before the Agile movement. Grandfather's talking now. That was back in the days when you had the V model and you had other project management approaches, where releasing a piece of software would take about 10 years, maybe 5 years, depending on the project. And you wouldn't have deployments intraday, as in, I think, Amazon or Netflix or Uber or whoever that is pushing at least a couple of updates per day.
Yeah.
That was way before continuous integration, continuous development. So you had, and forget about Agile.
Well, you had teams, MVPs as well.
Exactly. You had teams basically that were tasked with business analysis, then architecture, and then coding, and then testing, quality assurance, and all the rest of it. Exactly. So even a small modification to the code base could easily take weeks, if not months. But in contrast to today, where things are much more rapidly moving, we are talking about at least 15, 20 years back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. At least.
So going back to the original question, software versioning system or source code control system was actually more or less the only means at that stage to bring order to the chaos in terms of multiple people working on the project, on their project, and doing this orderly in an orderly fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Well, the point, I mean, it's no different from today. You'd have to do integration testing. You'd have to build releases. But it's, yeah, that's what those systems allow you to do, right? So.
Yes, but you see, alongside the overall approach to developing software, these version control systems have also changed. We're going to touch upon these in a minute about the specifics. But back in the olden days, for example, source control systems were server driven. So you had to have you did have to have a piece of software in place on the server side, and then people would use clients on their client machines, funny enough, to check in pieces of code. And in any contrast to this, if you take a look at Git, and we're going to go into the details in a minute, if you take a look at Git, all you need is essentially a machine with the SSH access, and then Git does the rest, more or less. So you don't even, funny enough, you don't even need a centralized instance such as a server if you want to do version control on your software. And that was pretty much facilitated. And that was pretty much facilitated by the idea of when Guinness originally developed Git about 16 years ago, everything that traditional systems such as CVS and SVC and all the rest of them wouldn't do exactly. So anything that these legacy systems would do, Git wouldn't. That was the overall idea. So focus was on scalability, security, and some other key aspects. And much more importantly, there wasn't any central server instance. That was the important bit.
Yeah, I've forgotten the CVS, actually. That's interesting mention.
Okay, it's mid-60s. Martin has just concluded his first university semester. So, Martin, why don't you tell us a little bit about the olden days?
The olden days? Olden days, there were... there was only one version, which was your paper tape or your punch card. And, you could only work on it as one person. And so, you write your program. Nobody else is working on that. And so that's...
The show notes may contain a link to a picture of Mr. Visser in a white coat, being in some sort of lab in the 60s, behind a mainframe computer, writing his first piece of software.
Indeed. I guess
if I can wrestle this from his cold dead hands.
Programs are very much done in isolation, and then I guess even the Moonlander software was written by various people, but still they were responsible for their part of the code rather than.
Yeah, how many thousand engineers were working on the software for this Apollo program? Quite a few, right? A thousand than that, right?
Yeah, quite a bit.
So they must have had some sort of version system in place already. But I think the whole system really took off, or the whole concept really took off with kind of really complex stuff like Unix back in the days, or mainframe operating systems like MVS or something.
Yeah.
Of course, all of these systems were closed source and proprietary.
They were, and extensive.
Yes. So, and then open source came along, and then things really exploded, right? I mean, I can recall back in the day, I can recall having worked at least with CVS, concurrent version system, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
SVC, I came across also Mercurial and Bazaar before I joined the Git movement, but more about this in a second.
Okay.
All of these head projects were open source, funny enough. Some of them I still use today. For example, if you clone the Firefox code base, the original repo, I think, is still Mercurial. Okay. And funny enough, the front-end piece of software, the front-end client, is aptly called HG. If you get the pun.
Yeah.
Of course, you have GitHub mirrors and all the rest of it. But when Firefox started out about, 20, 25 years ago, I think they made the switch mid 10s to Mercurial and stayed on this ever since. Well, now, given the fact that
Mercurial myself,
the browser code base, I think even supersedes something that the Linux kernel base, kernel code base, if I'm not completely mistaken, in size just a bit, because the browser is actually quite a complex beast these days.
What are you saying? It's bigger than a Linux code base. I guess the Linux code base is more modular, isn't it? In terms of
Some people accuse Firefox about the same of the same virtue. I mean, you have JavaScript execution engines, you have renderers, you have OS abstraction layers, and some other stuff.
Okay. All right, so why don't you tell us why you changed the Git?
Well, I mean, there was this chap called Linus Torvalds, I don't know if that rings a bell, Martin, the name, who came up with this brilliant idea of doing a terminal emulator back in the early 90s, and then posted a...
What do you mean he came up with a brilliant idea of a terminal emulator?
That was in 91 or 92.
No, we had terminal.
Or was that 90 or something? Sorry?
We had terminal emulators before that.
I wasn't finished with the sentence, Martin.
Ah.
Sorry. Originally, that was meant to be a terminal emulator for something called Minix. But then you had this brilliant idea of basically turning this into a full-blown operating system and posted a Usenet message. I think it was in 92 or something. Or was it 91? I can't even remember. And the rest, actually, is history.
Some time ago, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So, funny enough, they used, I mean, in the initial days, it was just a handful of contributors, right? So it wasn't, I mean, version control wasn't a big deal because you did it via email and all the rest of it. But shortly afterwards, the number of contributors grew exponentially. So they had to come up with something that would scale along.
Yeah, but the number of people working on something is certainly less important. It's more the fact that people can work on the same parts of the code base independently.
Yes, or at geographically least dispersed.
When someone has a piece checked out, and therefore they always have the latest version available if they're working on a related piece of code.
Exactly. So, yes. Funny enough, not all of the Linux contributors were actually located in Finland. Yeah. Quite a few of them actually used to live and work outside said country. And never mind, given the fact that when Linus was still living in Finland, they wouldn't all congregate at his house and started coding. Quite the opposite, actually.
They probably were in the summer anyway, wouldn't they?
Maybe. Exactly. Coding on the sauna. Brilliant idea, yes. So Linus had to come up with something called a version control system pretty quickly. Because if you take a look at the kernel history, I mean, ARM support, for example, entered in 95. So shortly after this whole thing was devised, you already had ARM support as part of the kernel. And then some chaps down in Stuttgart, Germany, late 90s, I might add, took a look at the kernel code base and ported this as a skunkwork project actually to something called the 390 architecture. That was in, I think, 1998 or 1999. But they could only do so because A, the source code was freely available and it was version controlled. The latter fact probably not that being that important. But of course, they had to make some changes because if you take a look at the Linux kernel, and Martin, you're absolutely spot on. It's quite modular. You have the majority of the code base is hardware independent, but then you have an architecture layer, which has to be adopted for each and every processor architecture or SoC architecture that Linux is running on. And that's exactly where the changes take place with regards to CPU initialization, MMU management, and all the rest of it as memory management, where you need actually hardware specifics.
And sensible in terms of design.
Indeed, and this is how operating systems are. And this is actually how portable operating systems are architected anyway. So, and of course, these IBM people had to feed back the changes, So that would that Linux then could add a 390 architecture to the set of supported architectures for something called the Linux kernel. At the time, they were using a service called BitKeeper, if I'm not completely mistaken. Links maybe in the show notes. But mid-teens, or early teens, actually. Teens? Zeros, as in 2002, 3 or something. The company behind BitKeeper decided to take the service offline and to migrate to proprietary software. And that's exactly when Linus said, this is not happening. And we have to move away from this. And this is how Git came into existence. Linus had this requirement of already foreseeing that the Linux kernel would probably be the biggest open source project in history on the planet. So name a bigger one in terms of contributors. I reckon even your browser pales in comparison to Linux.
Yes, with regards, questioning the foreseeing bit.
Well, I think at that stage, 32-bit, 64-bit was already in place. Mainframe architectures were supported. ARM was there. Intel was there, of course, because this is what Linux used to develop the first versions. And people were picking up the corpus rapidly in the embedded space for webcams, even back then, and for all sorts of things, as in PlayStation type device and all the rest of it. So you had to devise, being Linus Torvalds, of course, you had to devise a version control system that would scale alongside the growing number of contributors to that code base. Mm-hmm. And hence Git was born.
Yeah, and I think most people have been using it since, really, and therefore not just Linux.
Anyway, do you know what Git stands for?
Do I know what it stands for?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't have the normal CS in it, but most source code
control spotted, Mr.
systems Mr. have. But no, I couldn't tell you what it stands for.
No, I think Linus, I'm not too sure about the quote,
but
Linus...
it's the Finnish version of
it. Yeah. No, Linus, I think, if I recall this correctly, once said that he names all the important projects after him. And of course, being a stupid person, he wasn't too far away here. Now, if you actually type man git as in, if you invoke the manual page, the name says actually git the stupid content tracker. So well, this is actually the meaning behind git.
Fair enough. It's not exactly intelligent. That's true.
Well, you see, probably now is the time to shed some light on the mechanics behind a version control system, right?
Yeah, why not?
And that's, I think in that regard, Git is quite intelligent, funny enough. Okay. It starts with the versions, of course. A version control system should be able to manage the versions. Hmm. And if you actually develop software, you come normally across the necessity to develop something called a branch, meaning you take the existing version of the code base, and for example, if you want to experiment with the code, you create a copy of this. This branch then may contain changes to the code base, which probably haven't quite fully been tested yet, more or less your playground. Every version control system that I know, including the legacy ones, does support the notion of a branch. Once you have concluded your development, you normally check this back in again, creating a new branch, so to speak. And in Git, that would be the main header, so to speak. You can imagine Git like a log-like structure where people simply commit changes, check out versions, modify the code base, commit versions, and then push any changes back to the repo. And this is exactly the workflow that is no different in other version control systems. They all pretty much work the same way. Under the hood, of course, they're quite different. For example, CVS and SVC normally rely on server being present. Git doesn't. Because Git only relies on a file system. Push comes to shove, this can be as simple as an SSH connection. As a matter of fact, our web page, which is, of course, maintained by Git, as a version control system, doesn't have a central server instance because we only have a machine currently sponsored by IBM and other companies, I think, if marketing is anything to go by, that has one central feature. It has an SSH access, and that's all that is needed for the two of us and some other people to work on the website.
Yeah, so people often refer to these things as trees as well, hence the name branch. Sometimes people call them trunks as well.
This is where you store that bodies, right, in your vehicle?
Only if you're American. So.
Well spotted, Mr. Wizard. Well spotted. In England, you would use
American if you live in America. Let's put it that way.
How would you say in England? Not bonnet, but something else, right?
Mm-hmm. Say again.
What would you say in England? How would you call that in England? It's not. Boot. It's not a bonnet. Something else, right?
Boot.
Boot. Yes, exactly.
I couldn't tell you the German name.
Kofferraum.
Oh, it is Kofferraum. Yes.
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 The place to store dead bodies, if carried by a car. Exactly, that's exactly it. Yes. Okay, to the notion of trees, trunks, or trees or whatever. Exactly. And intelligent software version control systems actually allow you, for example, something called rebasing. Meaning you split the history of a commit chain into separate parts, which of course
what level are we going to explain this, because most people, not everybody may know what a commit is. Or what a commit
Martin,
does.
Why don't you fill us in then?
Well, you were on the roll, so why don't you carry on?
I thought I mentioned the fact that you commit a change to code base already, no, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, but what does that mean? It's like, okay.
You check out a code base that, for example, in Git terms, and I'm using Git just one example for version control system, because the other ones work pretty similar, although, as I said, the things on the node are quite different. If you clone a code base, or you check it out, to use a Git term, and then you modify it, by committing the changes, you aim at feeding back these changes into the main repository. Mm-hmm. In Git terms, that means adding the changed files to something called staging area. Once you commit the staging area, this is then ready to be pushed back to the main repository, which, as I said, can be as simple as a server running SSH. Git will then, under the hood, take care of identifying the changes and storing them reliably in a file system.
Okay. Right. So what happens after you commit?
Then everybody can... once you push the changes to the main repo, everybody can see these changes. By simply, to use again a Git term, by pulling down the latest version of the repo. I won't go into the technical details. There are terms like master, head, and all the rest of it. Floating around. There's an excellent website for Git called git-scm.org or something like this. Right. Details will be in the show notes. And Git, I think, is probably the version control system that has the best documentation on the planet, if memory serves correctly. Of course, that wasn't just Linus doing this, but quite a few quite a few other people too. So, as I said, if you are new to Git, this is the website to check out. So once you have pushed this, everybody can see the changes by simply putting down these changes and also advancing their local copy of the commit chain, if that makes any sense.
Okay, if they have made any changes themselves locally?
And this is where the fun starts. Then you essentially have to merge the changes. You can do this the dumb way, like the old days, where some version control systems just chose to overwrite the last commit, which is not really that intelligent.
That's not really a merge, is it?
No, it's just override. But more modern approaches, basically, including Git, do it the intelligent way and simply merge the deltas, as in the diffs, to use a Unix or Linux term. Mm-hmm. And Git, to some extent, and the details, as I said, are on the on-set website, Git is able to reconcile the deltas already automatically as part of a commit. Only if you have a conflict, for example, with regards to a specific file, Git will flag this and say, sorry, I cannot kind of put this into the repo because somebody else was before you. So in that case, you simply have the possibility of pulling down that chain and essentially merging your changes with them on your local GitHub on your local copy before you push it back to the repo again. I'm simplifying things. More details, as I said, as part of the Git documentation.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I mean, it also depends on how you develop, I guess, and how you organize your development in terms of branches. Because some people just work on the master branch and keep it that way, and some people prefer to make many different. Let's call it trunks or do separate code lines.
Well, it depends on A, your requirements, and B, what type of coder you are and with regard to your local playgrounds. I mean, some people just love complexity and thrive on complexities. I don't, for that matter. And yeah, positive, yes.
Good, that's it.
And I mean, Git really shines with more developers you throw at it, because one of the central features apart from security is actually scalability, because this is what Git is pretty good at.
My point being is that Git is the tool and you can use it in many different ways of development styles or the way you organize your development of.
Absolutely. Guns come to mind, right, Martin? You can use a gun basically to defend your house, or you can use guns to actively or proactively shoot people.
Interesting. Yeah, not quite a thought of that as immediately when I was discussing software development, but hey, what do I know?
This is just a little
the situation in Germany is obviously completely different than mind you, can you still freely buy guns in Germany? You used to be able to.
No, you can't. And I can't recall a time when that was possible.
Oh, no, I can. I remember.
Guns are highly regulated in Germany. They always have been, Martin. Martin, you shouldn't confuse illegal gun buying with legal one.
No, gun buying. No, I remember very, very clearly as a small boy driving over to Germany.
To Germany and buy guns.
Well, they had gun shops where guns were
for. Yes, but you would have to have a license in order to buy a gun.
Ah, okay.
You probably use one of these Dutch fake licenses, right?
Well, needless to say, I didn't buy one when I was 8 years old. But
why didn't you, Martin?
Indeed. I had that recollection that they just had any time.
No, you don't.
There was a gun shop, but that's all my recollection.
You don't have gun shops in the Netherlands?
No.
And what about the UK? Sorry, what about Special K?
No.
So where do you get your guns from in that case in K?
Don't know. You'd have to ask someone that has a requirement for one.
Well, as far as I can recall, about 90% of the rural population own guns.
Really? Oh, shotguns. Yeah, that's different.
What do you mean it's different?
Well, shotguns are just for flying birds and stuff.
For shooting things, exactly. Guns are too.
Yes, but they have different.
You're talking about a concealed weapon. Okay, got it. Mm. So, I mean, quite a few people, I reckon. I mean, not everybody in K can fly to the US in order to buy guns. So they must have some sort of local supply.
I imagine so, but I can't help you with that, I'm afraid.
You don't own guns?
No.
Okay.
I'm not living in America, so no. Or in Germany, for that matter. Yeah.
I mean, the stuff basically you can buy at the in these Weapon shops are mostly handguns. Are mostly shotguns. Handguns. I mean, do you carry a special permit? Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And you're talking background checks and all the rest of it. You cannot simply walk into a shop and buy a gun. Okay. This is not America.
Well,
for some strange reason.
I don't know. Maybe things have changed recently. Who knows?
But anyway, we digress. This is not the gun podcast. No, this is actually the Linux in-laws podcast. So where were we? Oh, okay. Yes. Branches and trunks and all the rest of it. Yes. So yes, Git allows you, among other things, basically, for example, to support rebasing, which comes in handy if you wanna identify, for example, the point in your commit chain where things went wrong.
Meaning, define
you or somebody else commits changes ABC, Martin then commits changes DEF, and somewhere in the middle, the whole thing fucks up in terms of really breaks. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it does compile, but you have a segmentation violation before you even start the program.
I mean, rolling back to a previous version, right?
Yes, exactly. And this is exactly where rebasing comes in terms of you can identify the point in time where simply a version stops working.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, you can identify the commit number or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can easily go back to the version that works.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very good description of this. Yeah.
That's okay. The fact that Git is quite hipster friendly, and yes. Git, if you're listening, this is the address is sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu.
Well, I mean, you say Git is hipster friendly, but there are obviously many development tools that.
Exactly. I mean, the beauty about Git is. And this is somewhat different to the likes of Mercurial Bazaar and some other legacy systems. And people, yes, I know there are Emacs major modes or minor modes for all of them, so don't shoot me. But Git is probably the version control system that has the best integration in hipster tools like VS Code, as in Visual Studio Code, PyCharm, Snowstorm, whatever that PHP thing is called these days, and IntelliJ and Eclipse and you name it.
Yep.
I mean, if you open Visual Studio Code, it'll detect that a .git file is present and will immediately integrate the whole thing into your version control system, the code base that you're trying to edit. And this is quite fancy, actually.
Mm.
And so,
did Linus write that as well, did he?
What did Linus write? Visual Studio Code, now I think it's written by Software Community of Microsoft.
Yeah, okay. Is that open source?
Visual Studio Code is, yes.
Hmm. How come? Do we know?
Because Microsoft decided to open source it.
That's nice of them. Anyway, sorry, we digress. Yeah.
Indeed, we do. In contrast to Visual Studio, which is not open source and has to be bought or something from Microsoft. Anyway, that's the bottom line in terms of all of the kind of things that hipsters and other people who program in fancy coffee shops like. Support more or less these days, support Git. Plus the fact that, of course, we shouldn't forget to mention that there are quite a few commercial offsprings that have functionality, that have the functionality built into
Git. Ah, you mean like a Git. GUI or something? Hmm.
Well, yes, it's called a browser, and the whole toolchain is called GitHub, if that rings a bell, Martin.
Yeah, indeed.
You probably use it every day working at your, or you used to work at your hipster GPU database thingy, right? What's the name of the company? Brightlight? Brightlight? Brightlight, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody uses,
some remaining people use actually something called GitLab, which is a somewhat comparable offering.
Okay.
It's an open core company, pretty much like Redis and all the rest of them.
Mm.
And the idea is basically to have a community edition, which is free of charge, open source, and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you want to do enterprise type thingies, you have to rely on a commercial license.
Right.
And of course, there are also pure open source alternatives available. For example, Gitea comes to mind, which the luck actually that I'm supporting uses for, funny enough, their website.
Okay.
So
what's the reason for using this?
It has a browser interface, among other things. Some of the hipsters that are part of the website team for the Lark prefer browser access. And it has a nice browser-based administration administration interface and that sort of thing that hipsters really like, especially the 50-year-plus old hipsters that form something called the Frankfurter Linux User Group.
Okay. They're like the GUIs. Okay, fair enough.
They're like the browser access, yes. Mm. Because, I mean, setting up a project in Git is a little bit of an effort in terms of you have to administer users that have access to the project, you have commit rights and all the rest of it. And this is where these kind of GitLab, GitHub, GitHub projects really shine, because they have functionality built into this. And GitHub does, of course, as well, because this is how GitHub makes their money, by enterprise features, selling this on a subscription basis. That's how the whole thing works. Mm-hmm. This is why Microsoft shared out how many billions for this?
Yeah.
One or something like this? It was amazing. It was quite a good chunk of money.
It was a chunk of money, and people at the time were wondering why they did such a thing. As in,
it's probably branding, but I digress. Mm-hmm. Anyway, to cut a long story short, this added functionality on top of pure Git, you don't get out of the box with Git. So people started to build their ecosystems around, and GitHub is probably the best example. It has nice browser-based access. It has a very funky CI/CD integration as a continuous integration, continuous development integration, which makes the associated workflow with code maintenance and modification just a breeze, including setting up projects, team members, and all the rest of it. For example, we use Hugo as a static website generator. More on the architecture, Ken, Mr. Fallon, if you're listening, in an upcoming episode, it's already planned for next year, where the beans will be spilled and how we do it. But suffice it to say, if you check in a change of the website, like a markdown file, what GitHub in the background does is through a, and Git is the same pretty much, through a commit, so through a so-called commit hook, it actually triggers a Hugo invocation that simply rebuilds the website on the fly. Mm-hmm. So you pull down the website, you change a file, you commit this file, you push the changes to the GitHub instance, and then on the fly, the website is rebuilt using Hugo, plus a few other things.
Okay, sounds rather handy.
Which is quite handy.
Yeah.
Because we have about 6 people working on the website simultaneously, as in concurrently.
Okay. Links in show notes for the website name?
luckfrankfurt.de. But GitHub is probably much more interesting for the people who think along similar lines. And of course, the GitHub link will be in the show notes.
Okay. Very good.
So for the few listeners who we didn't manage to put asleep yet.
Indeed.
Martin, any final thoughts on version control systems?
Final thoughts. I think, from the clunky versions, commercial versions of the 90s to what we have these days, it's been quite a bit of progress. Yeah.
Indeed.
And it all works rather well, I would say. It takes a little bit of, but not very long, to get used to these things or to work out how they work. But once you have done that, they are very easy to work with. And it keeps your code manageable. And
plus the fact that, as I already kind of touched upon, the all prevalent, visible, present, whatever you want to call it, Git thing is built into most IDE toolchains.
Yes, yes.
And this makes things really, really easy. So,
it does. Yeah.
Changing a file is simply, or actually putting or committing a change back is as simply as changing as saving a file, and then either some Emacs package or some Visual Studio Code integration takes care of the rest. And also basically flags any conflict and gives you tools at your disposal to resolve these conflicts pretty much out of the box without having to resort to mysterious command line things if you choose to do so.
Yeah, I mean, command line and hipsters don't really go together in the same sentence, right?
I think I'm the only hipster in my local coffee shop that used the command line.
Since when are you a hipster?
Always been.
Have you done some time travel?
Martin, there are a few things you don't know.
The machine is working again, is it?
Excellent. Okay. Before I forget, we should probably, before we conclude this episode, discuss poxies.
Oh.
Yes. And as one of your regular listeners will recall, poxies are our picks of the week in terms of if Martin has come across something apart from Special K, which is, of course, also a, what's the name of the band? A well-known placebo song, I might add.
Song? It's a serial, isn't it?
No, yes, but Placebo simply borrowed this as a title for one of the songs.
Okay. Oh, not familiar.
And that would actually
a hipster song of some sort. Yeah.
Yes, and that would actually be my pox. As in, yeah.
I'm confused. What's your pox?
My pox is Special K, as in the serial, the placebo song, and now known as a country northeast of something called the Netherlands. Sorry, northwest. It used to be an isle.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly known as the United Kingdom, but now it's just called Special K, because the splinter groups like Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland decided to break away for a reason. We are recording this in February 2022.
Yeah, we're not.
It is, we are, Martin.
It's first of November 2011.
Martin clearly hasn't enjoyed the advantage of time travel. No, people. Formerly, this country was known as United Kingdom, but forget about the United. Lizzie, if you're listening, good luck with you. Good luck to you. Just stay inside, just in case.
Well, she's struggling with her health at the moment, isn't she?
That's my understanding. Yes. So the dissolving union didn't exactly help matters, but that's beside the point. Anyway, okay. What's your pox?
Yeah. It is. I'm just trying to remember the name. I can tell you the story. I don't remember the name in a minute. This is a story about an FBI agent who infiltrates a far-right organization in the U.S.
Yes. The name you're looking for is Donald Trump.
No. That's
are you sure?
It is an organization.
I'm just checking. That's all. Yeah.
What's his name? Harry Potter is in it. Daniel Radcliffe.
Harry Potter infiltrates the FBI. Nice one. Is that one of the sequels I haven't watched yet?
Clearly, yes. This is the latest Harry Potter. You probably not.
Nice
come
one.
Out in Germany, I imagine.
So what's the angle here, apart from dark magic?
No, it's quite interesting.
Harry Potter infiltrates the FBI, okay. Yeah. Does Voldemort play a part, I wonder?
He puts up a pretty good American accent as well, so it's just not bad.
Voldemort or Harry Potter, or both?
No, Voldemort doesn't feature in this movie, unfortunately.
He doesn't, okay.
No. Anyway, so, yeah, so it's definitely worth watching. It's quite
details name in the show notes if we can dig this up.
I just can't remember the name here. Yeah. As with all these American films, they all have like a two-word title, don't they, which are very similar. But it's definitely worth watching. It's a very good.
I think the movie is called Federal Magic. Maybe not. Maybe there is no such thing as federal magic.
Imperium. There you go. The film is called Imperium.
Imperium. Mm. So, what's the storyline then? Infiltrates the FBI, and then what?
No. He works for the FBI. He infiltrates.
He works for the FBI. Okay.
Yes. Some cesium has been stolen, and he the suspicion is that this has gone to a far right group. So he infiltrates these organizations and tries to find it.
And that's a TV series or movie or
it's
what?
It's a movie. Yeah, it's a movie. Yeah.
Movie. Okay. Mm. That's one. Mm-hmm. Available on Disney Plus, Netflix, whatever.
It's a 2016 movie, so probably
2016. Okay, it's ancient.
Yes, only just recently.
Children, 2016 was the year when Visual Studio just got the light of the day or something.
2016? No, it's got to be older than that.
Visual Studio Code? No, sorry, not Visual Studio, but Visual Studio Code. No, I think really? It was around that time. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. This feels like I've been...
No, something happened in 2016. But yes.
Many things, probably.
Mongo floated.
Really?
If memory serves correct, yes. Mongo, of course, who for the few listeners, A, is still awake, and B, remember that episode on the databases with Professor Meyer, featuring Professor Meyer.
Yes.
Of course, Mongo would be a NoSQL database. And that company floated in 2016.
Yeah, it's...
And Martin still regrets the fact that he didn't buy shares at the time.
Not really. I was never a fan of MongoDB. So.
Martin, they floated at 27 and now are worth 550 or something like this.
Who needs money, right?
Exactly, Martin. No, who needs money anyway?
Go with the open source... what do you call it? Ideal, does it?
If the employer of said Mr. Visser is listening, Martin has just decided to donate his salary to worthy cause. So stop the paychecks and just send it to a charity of your choice. Because it's just money, as we just heard anyway.
That doesn't really work, does it? Because then I can't eat and I can't have a house and I can't work for them either anymore. So there's
this is why standards, right?
Companies pay you, really.
I see. But Martin, as we just learned, it's only money anyway. Right, so no sweat.
You keep working for them. It's quite clever, really. They've got that quite soft.
I see. Martin's anyway. Just trying to wiggle his way out of this one. Okay. Okay, that's pretty much it. Any parting thoughts? Final thoughts?
Not for me, no. Well, it is Halloween after all, so happy Halloween.
Yes, and we're recording in 2022, Halloween has moved to February of 2022.
Yes.
It's part of this flux compensator transductor thing or whatever, I don't know. Maybe picking such a cheap mechanic wasn't the best idea after all, Martin.
Yeah,
there seems to be something seriously wrong with the machine. Yes, thank you for listening and looking forward to hearing from you in terms of feedback. Oh, feedback, yes, feedback, yes. Oh, if you have any feedback.
We don't have feedback.
No, we don't have feedback, but if you have feedback for us, the address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. Likewise, if you have enough money, because as we understand, as Martin rightly observed, it's only money anyway. We just love to take your cash. The email address is sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu. Especially if you happen to be Microsoft, IBM, sorry, not IBM. IBM, if you're listening, we do not take checks. We only take, we only take cash. That's very important. Other companies may be able to give us credit card details, but we only take cash from IBM for obvious reasons.
Anyway. Currency of your choice.
Yes. Yes. Bitcoin is always appreciated, but so is cold hard cash, especially coming from IBM. Anyway, with that,
are you looking forward? Job?
No, I'm not. Why?
Oh, okay. Well, you keep mentioning IBM.
No, Mark, they would have to pay me in cash. Wire transfer wouldn't work for me. No, not really. Okay, enough said.
Enough said.
Yes.
See you next.
Joke aside, IBM, if you're listening and want to get in touch. sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu. Special email address just for you. Ooh. Anyway, do send us mail and looking forward to having you back soon.
This is the Linux Inlaws.
You come for... the knowledge.
But stay for the madness. Thank you for listening. This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, Tab Attribution Share Alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Salute Margo, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
Good idea.
Yes, by the way, you didn't get the memo, right? Because I'm not too sure if you were CC'd. Marketing is asking why you haven't fired them yet, because the fortnight is over.
Is that a new record?
You tell me, Mr. Visser.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? Maybe they were cheap. Maybe they are cheap.
I see. Very good.
We can keep them for a bit. Yeah.
Can we now? If you're still living in this strange country called the UK, which is, well, it's K these days because the union will break away soon, right? So,
I don't know.
A country named K. Excellent. Like special K.
I haven't heard anybody dying to break away, but yeah.
You seem to be out of touch with reality, Mr. Ritter.
Oh, I don't watch the news. It's all nonsense.
A fair play to you.
Waste of time. Yeah.
Indeed. But you're still funding the BBC, so that's okay.
And again, yes, it's very unfortunate that they should really cancel this bloody TV license for all the nonsense they produce. It's absolute rubbish.
Well, plus you're paying for your Netflix subscription on top.
No, I don't have Netflix. No.
Disney Plus?
Disney Plus, yes.
There you go. Same thing, almost.
Well, it's better than the BBC. That's for sure.
Is that hard to achieve, I wonder?
Yeah.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.